This is WWE superstar Drew McIntyre, and you're listening to the WWE Podcast.
One that everybody wants, me.
Becky Lynch is going to WrestleMania.
Claymore!
Oh! Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
This is my iron.
You're going to acknowledge me.
What's going on, everybody? Guys and girls, welcome back to another edition of the SmackDown Review right here on the WWE Podcast. As always, I am one of the hosts of this show, Michael Ritter. You can find me on X at Michael5Ritter, on Instagram at Michael Ritter5, and also one of the hosts of the Football Function podcast, available on all your podcasting platforms, including the one that you're listening to this show on right now, and also available on Patreon if you prefer an ad-free listening experience, which is the best way to listen to the WWE podcast in its entirety. Starts at $1 a month. There is obviously tiers that you can join to get more benefits, but nonetheless, that is the quick little plug there. Today we're going to be talking about SmackDown that aired on March 22nd, 2024 from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Shout out to DJ Kuzmo for the location breakdown per usual. And we will dive into this episode of SmackDown here in just a little bit. I did want to put a little bit of a disclaimer out there at the very beginning of this. I am recording this Friday night. It's right around 10 o'clock, so SmackDown's been off the air for a little bit less than an hour. And the reason why I'm doing it on Friday night instead of Saturday is because I actually have to wake up in the morning and go to work. And that's just pretty much... You know, I'm not really sure what tomorrow is going to be like after work, so I kind of wanted to make sure that I got this out of the way before any of that took place. So that's why I'm doing it on Friday night, but I also wanted to throw another disclaimer out there. I'm not sure if you can hear yet in my voice. I'm sure at some point during the course of this episode you will be able to hear it, but I have been dealing with a crazy, I don't know if it's a toothache or some type of jaw pain, but long story short, a couple days ago I woke up just like 6:30 in the morning, regular time, and for some reason my jaw hurt, like my cheek hurt. I really wasn't sure why. I thought that maybe I just slept on it a little bit wrong, like maybe my mouth was open and it was just in like a weird position for a little bit too long. So I was like, cool, you know, I really wasn't too worried about it. And then it didn't really hurt again until the next morning, and it hurt even worse. Like, it hurt worse than it did the day before that. And I was like, oh, man, this is kind of weird. Now it's something that I might want to pay a little bit closer attention to. And then, of course, you know, once I get through work that day, I get home, and it was a lot more sore. And then I wake up the next morning, and that's whenever I really can barely open my mouth. The left side of my mouth is really swollen, so... It's definitely affecting the way that I talk. It's extremely uncomfortable. So definitely bear with me here. I'm going to try to get through this SmackDown as efficiently as I possibly can. But I'm not sure if this is going to be one of the more longer episodes. Because it is not necessarily easy to talk for a long time whenever you're dealing with something like this. So I did just want to kind of put that out there. Don't expect it to be a long-term thing, hopefully. Hopefully it's nothing like, you know, another wisdom tooth extraction. That would just be the absolute worst thing to happen right now. But like I said, let's go ahead and get into this episode of SmackDown. The more blabbering I do, the more I start rambling on, the more that, you know, my mouth is going to hurt. So let's go ahead and get to the nitty gritty here. This is the 188th SmackDown review that I've been doing here on the WWE podcast. So I did want to, you know, kind of put that out there. We're creeping up on 200. We'll be there probably in the middle of the summer or something like that. So I'm looking forward to hitting that milestone. But this episode of SmackDown started with Rey Mysterio versus Santos Escobar. This has, you know, been a grudge match that's kind of been building for the better part of 4 or 5 months now. So the match was going on. They gave it a pretty decent amount of time, obviously back and forth, a lot of physicality, a lot of animosity. You can kind of just sense it wasn't a let's touch hands and shake hands before the match. Like, these two wanted to beat the hell out of each other. And then out comes Dominic Mysterio and, you know, obviously a luchador mask, distracting Rey Mysterio enough for Santos to hit a 619 and get a much needed win for himself. If he wants to be taken seriously, especially at it, you know, as the leader of a faction, I think he's got to start stacking up wins at some point. Getting this win over Rey Mysterio for this highly anticipated matchup was definitely something that he needed to happen. The next thing that happened here on SmackDown was Bianca Belair interrupting a backstage little conversation between Bayley and Naomi. And, you know, Bianca just pretty much immediately calls out Bayley for her past tactics. She does not give her the benefit of the doubt whenever you're talking about somebody changing for the better and maybe, you know, going a little bit out of the usual path for Bayley, which is usually, you know, her being a heel, at least for the past few years. So Bianca isn't just going to be fooled right away. I guess it's kind of similar to what Drew McIntyre was saying over on Monday Night Raw whenever Jey Uso went over there. He was bringing up the past tactics and all of his heel antics that he was doing for the better part of 3 years. So now we're seeing Bayley kind of deal with that same thing, and I actually appreciate this. It doesn't go over my head that, you know, they're actually acknowledging something like this, so I did want to, you know, give a quick shout-out to the creative team for, you know, putting the thought into, you know, not letting Bayley just get off the hook so easily with Bianca. Naomi actually has to split the two up after things kind of get a little bit heated, and then after a commercial break, Naomi is, she's still shown walking with Bianca Belair, and Naomi is pretty much just defending her actions, pretty much saying like, look, I understand your approach, what you're saying here, but we can't take out damage control one by one. We somewhat have to come together in order to even the playing field a little bit. But real quick, guys, before I get back into the SmackDown review, I have to give you guys a little bit of a peek behind the curtain. It is now Saturday afternoon. It's 12:30 my time exactly. So obviously, as you guys know, just from about 6 minutes ago whenever the show started, I started this show Friday night. And it was supposed to get out Friday night. That's when I was going to send it to Matt and it'd be published, produced, all that good stuff. But as I was recording, literally, as I started talking about the segment with Bianca Belair and Naomi backstage, I got extremely lightheaded. Like, I'm actually, like, because of the magic of editing, you're not going to even be able to notice that this is a completely different day. But I'm putting the audio files together and, you know, making it one episode. But long story short, last night whenever I was recording, I damn near passed out. Like, I had to hit pause, kind of lay my head down on the desk. I thought that it was just, you know, the pain from, you know, that I was telling you guys about, you know, the, I don't know if it's a wisdom tooth or some type of oral pain that was going on. I thought that's what it was stemming from. I thought that, man, it's just giving me a headache. Kind of getting lightheaded here, so I had to take a little bit, and then I started, you know, trying to go back into it, and then my stomach started to hurt, and I just started feeling a little bit nauseous. I do think that it was just because of the antibiotics that I was taking. I think that I maybe just didn't eat enough or something like that, but either way, I do apologize, and, you know, luckily, because, like I said, the magic of editing, it's not even going to be noticeable. But I kind of just wanted to give you guys a little peek behind the curtain there that I had to take a little bit of a break, and this is actually me coming back to finishing this show. So thank you guys so much for understanding, I guess, that, you know, that's just kind of how podcasting works these days. But anyways, let's continue on with the show here. Up next, we get a WrestleMania 40 tag team qualifying match, Theory and Waller versus the OC. Theory and Waller get the win thanks to Austin Theory having his feet on the ropes during a roll-up. And obviously, the OC somewhat gets screwed out of this. Their luck just continues to go down the wrong path. And you just have to get a team like Austin Theory and Grayson Waller on the WrestleMania card. I know that they're not big-time players yet. They're kind of just, you know, mid-card guys. But they do have very strong personalities, and, you know, Austin Theory's been at WrestleMania pretty much every year since like 2020, so I don't anticipate him missing this year, especially at such a big event like WrestleMania 40. And then after that, we get a Bron Breakker video package. It was almost, you know, themed and in spirit of the NFL Combine. Like, they were posting his 40-yard dash, his in-ring shuttle, all that stuff. Like, you never see that about anybody else, but it's pretty noteworthy. that Bron Breakker is, you know, a hell of an athlete. And I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I don't think Bron Breakker runs a 4.3. I think that might have been a little bit of an inflated number. Go look at, I mean, if he runs 4.38 or whatever it was at his massive frame at like, what, 240 pounds probably? Like, this is, you know, a pretty big dude. Then he's, we're not just talking about one of the best pro wrestlers. We're talking about one of the best athletes on the world right now. Just, this is a freakish time if that's really true. But who knows? He might just be a hell of an athlete, got a lot of speed. I'm not going to say that his 10-yard split isn't extremely impressive. I mean, just look at the way he runs the ropes. He can absolutely get around a ring really quick. And I'm not saying that he's not like a 4.5 guy, 4.45 or something like that, you know, like in the 4.4s. But 4.38, that's like Julio Jones. That's like a very fast type of wide receiver, defensive back, running back. Some of the fastest NFL players. So I don't know. I could be misspoken there. But I just thought that was a little bit of a fast time than I expected somebody who's built like Bron Breakker to run. But it was just, you know, the video package kind of hyping us up for what he's going to bring to SmackDown. I am thrilled to have him on the SmackDown roster. And, you know, I think that he's going to be one of the next few guys to carry a big-time championship over the next couple years. He's well on his way. Up next, we get Naomi versus Io Sky. And after Naomi comes to the ring, we get Io Sky's music. And the rest of Damage Control comes out, and we think that maybe Io is just going to get a little bit of a delayed entrance, maybe try to put the spotlight on her a little bit, knowing and confirming that she's the leader of the group. But she doesn't come out for a little bit, and in fact, the camera shows that she's actually backstage beating the hell out of Bayley. So Damage Control just doing what, you know, whatever they want to do. But I will say, is that not a little bit impressive that it's not like the lackeys taking out the champion's challenger? You know, for WrestleMania, obviously, Bayley being Io's opponent. Typically, like, go back and look at, like, the dirty work that Evolution was doing for Triple H back in the day. The cabinet, such as the Basham Brothers and Orlando Jordan for JBL. I mean, lackeys are there for a reason. And it's not like, you know, Asuka, Dakota Kai, and, Kairi Sane. It's not like they're lackeys by any means, but they're lower on the totem pole by default because Io Sky is the women's world champion, or the WWE women's champion, I apologize. So usually the champion isn't the one that's putting their hands on the challenger on a SmackDown backstage just 2 weeks away from WrestleMania. So I thought that was a little bit cool. I thought that was a little bit different. Like in a storyline where they have, you know, taking notes from past feuds and past storylines in the past, I think that the way that they're doing it with this specific rivalry, Bayley versus Io Sky, it just every week it seems to get better. And it wasn't like it was a big deal, but it was just kind of like a small thing that I really appreciated, and I just didn't expect it. I thought that maybe she was going to be getting attacked backstage. Bayley was getting a little bit of revenge on her, but that's not what was going on. And then Io Sky comes out to the ring, and she wins this match against Naomi with an over the moonsault. And then Damage Control attacks Naomi after the match. And then out comes Bianca Belair to try to even the odds, which she does a little bit. But it just wasn't enough. Damage Control stands tall once again. And I thought it was pretty cool here. As they were, you know, they had already beaten Naomi to the ground. They were doing the same thing to Bianca. But Naomi kind of throws herself over Bianca just to shield her and take a little bit of the beating. I will say, you know, Bianca was still taking some shots, but it was the thought and it was the act of kindness from Naomi that I was like, man, you know, that's something that I know that you were probably told to do it. If not, if that was a decision that you did on your own, it was a great move. And I think that I'm probably not the only person who noticed that and probably has a lot more respect for Naomi. But the, you know, the championship picture really doesn't change much. You know, it's just getting more and more intensified, if you will. It's still going to be one-on-one. You know, Bianca Belair still doesn't trust Bayley. Naomi's kind of there in the middle. She's trying to play both sides. Like, I really, you know, I wasn't here when Bayley was doing that, but she's been nothing but real to me since I have been here. I also respect you, Bianca, for looking out for me. So there's just more and more layers that are being added to this, and you have to appreciate the way that they, you know, are giving this team more and more time. Bianca is seen trying to wash out the mist from Naomi's eyes backstage, in which they're approached by Tiffany Stratton, who just has, you know, obviously that arrogance about her. It's nice seeing her on TV. She's one of the reasons that SmackDown's women's division has become so deep. Another reason why the SmackDown women's division is deep is because Jade Cargill makes her first official appearance as a SmackDown superstar next week. And I'm, you know, I gotta admit, I'm pretty excited about this. She is prototypical. She is literally what you would create. If I were to go in there and turn on WWE 2K24, I would want to create Jade Cargill. So the fact that she's been in the lab, she's been crushing it at the Performance Center, just, you know, polishing her craft, working on anything that maybe needed a little bit of improvement, coming from AEW to WWE. I think it's disrespectful to call AEW like the minor leagues, but it's no secret that she's going to get a lot more exposure working for the WWE. So, you know, obviously she wants to be on the top of her game. We keep things backstage. Kevin Owens has a backstage interview in which he's walked up on by Pretty Deadly. And obviously, you know how they, you know, they like to tease, they like to poke fun, especially whenever they have a numbers advantage. Like if they have 2-on-1, they're going to always try to, despite being somewhat new on the roster, bully people who are by themselves. And luckily, Kevin Owens was not by himself. They didn't see Randy Orton standing right behind them. So Randy Orton challenged them to a tag team match next week with Randy Orton being his partner. So that's another thing that's going to be taking place on SmackDown next week. Not only do we get Jade Cargill, not only do we get probably some other shenanigans as well, but you know, you're going to get a tag team match that's going to feature both challengers for Logan Paul's United States Championship at WrestleMania. Let's see. Ooh, things get a little bit different with what happened next on the show. This was really a page out of like 2005, 2007, just that era, kind of as the Ruthless Aggression era was kind of walking into the sunset. You saw a lot of on-location segments. Like, you saw a lot of segments that were at, you know, Randy Orton's house, JBL chasing immigrants across the border, or whatever it was, you know. You would see WWE superstars do things not in the WWE arena. You know, you can even go back to Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt whenever he went to the... Man, what was that? Whenever he burnt it down. Gosh, I don't know why the name is slipping me. Was it called the Wyatt Compound or something like that? I don't know for sure, so I do apologize. But I know that Randy Orton had something to do with destroying that, which was leading to a program with Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt, which is kind of off topic. It was just something that reminded me that anytime we see something like this, it just feels old school for WWE. And the fact that we got to see AJ Styles cut a promo from his house, and then all of a sudden, we see LA Knight show up at his house in Gainesville, Georgia. And those two start fighting in the front yard. Now, one funny thing about this, I will say, is in the Discord, which is another plug, if you want to communicate with other listeners of the WWE podcast during and, you know, before or after any type of WWE event, subscribe on Patreon. $1 a month gets you inside the Discord. And while we were watching SmackDown, I was a little bit behind, you know, the people that were watching it live. I didn't get a chance to start it until like, you know, 30 minutes till after it was already going on. And Howard Poole, great friend of mine, he actually mentioned something in the Discord about LA Knight getting arrested for fighting in public. And I thought it was real because I hadn't gotten to that point in the show yet. I just saw that message. I was like, what? Like, holy crap, I did not see this. And next thing you know, sure enough, as I'm watching SmackDown, I get to that segment and I know exactly what they're talking about. So I got a little bit of a laugh from that. But thankfully, he didn't get any real legal trouble. But in this specific angle and storyline, I did think it was kind of funny. But as far as, you know, the decision to have this happen, I think it's brilliant. It's different. You know, you can only see one person come out and cut a promo by themselves, you know, in front of the live in-person audience and get attacked from behind. They added a little bit, you know, twist. They raised the stakes a little bit. They almost made it seem like it's very, very personal, you know, because, you know, it is. AJ Styles flew all the way to Australia to cheat LA Knight out. So I don't think it's very, very tough. I don't think it's too hard of a task for LA Knight to fly to Georgia to get a little bit of retribution on AJ Styles. But nonetheless, I, you know, I'm all for this. I like this type of twist in a storyline, but I also like this as far as trying to make a grudge match feel important going into WrestleMania. Because, yeah, you could have LA Knight, AJ Styles, one of them, you know, made a name for themselves in TNA, the other one in Impact. So you can kind of sort of see the connection there as far as outside of WWE. And you just take kind of where they are right now. These are two phenomenal, you know, LA Knight has a long way to go, but AJ Styles is a Hall of Famer. You know, he was Undertaker's last match. So this is someone that is, he's not shy of being a big-time player on WrestleMania and, you know, on that big stage. So you could expect LA Knight to get some big-time exposure here as well. I don't think he wrestled on WrestleMania last year, did he? I could be wrong. I don't think LA Knight had a feud at WrestleMania, but this is a pretty big moment for LA Knight in his career, if indeed this is his last WrestleMania, or his first WrestleMania, and, you know, I'm not mistaken, because I could be. He could have had a match at WrestleMania last year, and it's just slipping my mind. I mean, it was damn near an entire year ago. But he's without a doubt good enough to be on this stage, and I'm looking forward to seeing his first opportunity to be on a stage like this. But let's go ahead and move on. We have another WrestleMania 40 tag team qualifying match here. The Authors of Pain versus the Street Profits with new gear, new entrance gear. I noticed that the Street Profits definitely switched it up a little bit. And not only did they look different, but this match kind of felt different too. Angelo Dawkins absolutely put Rezar on his ass outside of the ring. And then he continues to shine to absolutely win this match for his team, despite Ford being the one who executed the inside cradle on Akam. But the reason why I'm giving credit to Angelo Dawkins here is because every time the match was about to end, like, you saw it happen. Like, oh man, they got 2-on-1 advantage. AOP is about to win this. Bam, here comes Angelo Dawkins knocking one of them on their ass, kind of saving the day. He gets thrown out of the ring. They, you know, go to do another finishing move. Bam, he comes and saves the day again. If you watch this match, it's no question who deserves the shine, who deserves the attention, because Angelo Dawkins, I feel like I wasn't even the only person in the room that thought that he put a, you know, a crazy performance together. I was very impressed. He doesn't really get, you know, the respect that Montez Ford gets whenever you talk about who's carrying this team, who's the star of this team. Montez Ford gets a lot of the attention, and rightfully so. You know, I'm one of the people that would, if you, you know, threw me into a little voting booth and you had Angelo Dawkins' name in a square and Montez Ford's name in a square, and the question was who's going to be a bigger single star, I'm sure that most people would, you know, vote Montez Ford, scribble that in, throw it in the little voting box or whatever, and you could throw the I voted sticker on. But me personally, I got a little bit of a push in the direction of the other candidate. Montez Ford absolutely is one of a kind. Like I said, he reminds me of Randy Orton. He just reminds me of somebody that has the charisma. He has the build that, you know, is going to age well, and he's just going to have a long run here in WWE. But Angelo Dawkins, he's got something too. And he's the one that's kind of, you know, he's starting from a different place than Montez is. You could tell Montez Ford's a natural athlete. And I'm not saying Dawkins isn't, but it's clear. Just look at their figure. You can tell which one would probably do better in a physical fitness test. So Montez Ford, it might be easier for him to do certain things, whereas Angelo Dawkins has to work a little bit. And I liken this to, like, the game of basketball. You know, some people can wake up out of bed. It doesn't matter how much they work out. It doesn't matter what their diet is. Like Luka Doncic, for example. You know, I'm sorry if I pronounce his name wrong. But Luka from the Dallas Mavericks. He can wake up, crawl out of bed, go smoke a hookah, drink a six-pack, and still drop 35 points, 15 rebounds, get a double-double, maybe even a triple-double, and put on a phenomenal performance. Whereas if Jason Tatum, who's one of my favorite players being a Boston Celtics fan, if Jason Tatum were to do that, crawl out of bed, not work out, have a terrible diet, go smoke hookah or whatever, he would have a terrible performance. Jason Tatum has to put in the work, grind, have that quote-unquote Mamba mentality to put in the work to be where he is and, you know, be one of the top NBA players in the entire world, or in the entire league, I should say. But for people like Luka, it's just easier. They're more of a natural, just gifted basketball player. And the same thing goes for wrestling. I think Montez Ford is just more naturally gifted than Angelo Dawkins is. So the fact that they are still here, you know, on the same level essentially in this tag team, you know that Montez Ford is putting in a hell of a lot of work, and you just have to know that Angelo Dawkins is right there with him. If he is, then he must be putting in, you know, I don't want to say more work, but he's got to damn sure be, you know, holding his own out there. But I had to give some respect and a shout out here to Angelo Dawkins, because I think it's beyond, you know, beyond overdue that he gets, you know, a little bit of his flowers while they're still in a tag team. But the final thing we'll talk about here on SmackDown was the main event. Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes go face to face. They both say that they've come alone. And because of that, Roman Reigns calls him stupid. He calls him an idiot. You'll never be the face of WWE. You can never be the WWE champion because you're so stupid. He says that he's a fool for trusting Seth Rollins, because obviously Roman Reigns has a lot of history as to why you shouldn't trust Seth Rollins. And Cody kind of admits that, yeah, Seth may hate me. He may, you know, have another agenda after this is all said and done. And I, you know, like I just said, Cody admitted, Seth Rollins may hate me, but he assures Roman Reigns that Seth hates him more. And then Cody asked Roman Reigns if, you know, I mean, you're asking me and you're imposing all these questions about whether I can trust my partner. Can you even trust your partner? Referring to The Rock, he even says, like, who's the one that's really in charge here? Is it the tribal chief or is it the final boss? Roman calls Cody a number two, albeit, you know, compliments him a little bit, saying that he's a great number two. He even calls him the greatest number two of all time, although that's a little bit debatable right there, you know, because who was number one back in the Attitude Era? Was it Stone Cold? Was it The Rock? Because they can't both be number one, so somebody had to be number two. And I know Cody isn't, you know, at a higher place than either one of those guys, so we can go and stop it right there. But I get what Roman Reigns was saying, because Cody is red hot right now. Winning back-to-back Royal Rumbles has to be, you know, something that you take account for whenever you're evaluating Cody Rhodes and where he stands right now on the totem pole. But Roman Reigns, like I said, he calls him a great number two, arguably the best of all time, but he does say that that is all he will ever be. And then Cody says, hey, let's get real. We were just talking about that totem pole, right? Well, Cody admits and acknowledges where exactly Roman Reigns is on that totem pole. He mentions Hulk Hogan. He mentions Ric Flair, Stone Cold Steve Austin, John Cena. And he knows that their kids' generation, like the very next generation of wrestlers that's going to be, you know, stepping foot into the WWE and all around the world, he knows that they are probably wanting to be Roman Reigns. And the camera pans to Roman. He puts a smile on his face. You can just tell that, you know, he knows that's true, that Roman Reigns is the guy of this era. Whenever you're thinking of, you know, to WrestleMania 31, WrestleMania, because literally look at WrestleMania 31, which had the main event of Roman Reigns versus the or Brock Lesnar, I apologize, and Seth Rollins cashed in the Money in the Bank briefcase. WrestleMania 31 to here we are, WrestleMania 40, Roman Reigns has been the guy for a decade. Like WrestleMania 32, who did he go against? Triple H, right? Dallas, Texas. WrestleMania 33 was that? Oh, I can't remember if that was The Undertaker or if that was WrestleMania 34. But nonetheless, I know he probably missed one, you know, whenever he was battling leukemia. But it's still, I mean, look at his resume, man. WrestleMania 39, WrestleMania 38, 37, 36, 35. Like, this is someone that just does not miss. He is the WrestleMania main event. Like, that's going to be what he's remembered for. Whenever you're thinking back at WrestleMania, like, if you're ever binging the WrestleMania, somebody who didn't watch this era 20 years from now, and they're just going back on Peacock or wherever the WWE Network and all of their, you know, their vault is located at the time, when they go back and they do their research, it's going to be right in their face. Roman Reigns was the guy carrying the WWE flag for so damn long. So Cody Rhodes acknowledges that. He's not wrong. Cody's doing a damn good job trying to be the next guy. And that's kind of exactly what he says. He says, I'm not a number two. I'm the one. Referring to the one that's going to put an end to the 4-year reign damn near that Roman Reigns is on right now. Like, it's just crazy that we're even to this point. But if Cody Rhodes loses at WrestleMania 2 weeks from now, like, what are we even doing? Like, seriously, what's the point here? But do you feel like this is the last 2 weeks that Roman Reigns is going to be champion? Like, that's the question. And that's why they set themselves up in such a beautiful spot. Because you can tell yourself there's no way in hell that Cody Rhodes is going to lose again in the WrestleMania main event back-to-back years. And then you could also tell yourself there is no way in hell that Roman Reigns has 14 days left being champion. One of those is going to happen. Like, one of those has to become a reality. And that's kind of where I lean, that, man, this is going to be very crazy. And it's exactly what you want. You don't want a predictable outcome to this. And the match itself, you're not going to want to blink. Go to the restroom before this match. Like, I promise you, this is going to be one that's going to have storytelling all throughout. It's going to be one of the most historic WrestleMania main events of all time. And I feel pretty confident saying that. And I'm somebody that loves the Ruthless Aggression era and all of the beauty and the glory that it had during those WrestleMania years. But, you know, I have no problem admitting that this year is going to be special, no doubt about it. But Cody Rhodes, after he says, "I'm the one," he sticks his hand out for a handshake, tells Roman Reigns good luck at WrestleMania, but Roman Reigns obviously declines, leaves the ring, and as his music is playing, Solo and Jimmy appear from the crowd. They kind of sneak up. They, you know, seem like they might be wanting to plant an attack on Cody Rhodes, but the camera also pans, just like the Avengers, Cody is not alone either. Jey Uso and Seth Rollins come from one side of the crowd each, and they step foot, kind of stand between Cody Rhodes and the Bloodline, and we're able to kind of see that little visual of multiple different feuds. You know, you got the Jimmy versus Jey aspect going on there, Cody versus Roman. Seth is going up against somebody else, not Solo Sikoa, but still, you know, he just provides that even the odds type of perspective there, and I'm all for this. Like, this closing the show felt right, as well as all the matches that they had going on, kind of furthering, figuring out who's going to be in the six-pack ladder match for WrestleMania with all these tag teams, and obviously the AJ Styles versus LA Knight stuff. This was a weird episode of the SmackDown review for me because I started it last night, and here I am finishing at damn near 1 o'clock. So like I said, I apologize for the mishap in the middle, but, you know, I could have just restarted and just said, hey, I'm only 6 minutes in. I'll just go ahead and start from scratch and, you know, not even mention what happened. But I wanted you guys to know about that. I kind of wanted it to be a little bit of a peek behind the curtain as to what's going on and how you really can't predict how things are going to go whenever you're podcasting. But thank you guys so much for tuning in here. I hope you guys all have a good rest of your weekend. Only 2 weeks from today until WrestleMania Night 1. So I know that I'm extremely excited about that. I'm sure you guys are as well. This is a great time for the mailbag and everything else that the WWE podcast has to offer. So thank you so much for making the SmackDown review part of your weekly listening experience. And hopefully you will continue to do so. Maybe even go show me some love over on the Football Function podcast. That would mean the world to me. If you're a football fan, I promise you we cover your favorite team. You can get your voice heard, your opinions out there, and just be part of that community that's really growing. And, you know, that obviously means the world to me. But have a damn good weekend, guys. Walk passionately in the direction of your dreams, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEPodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to Patreon.com/WWE Podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.